Thank you very much, and welcome this afternoon. So it is meant to be a workshop. I have designed it in a way that I will tell you a little bit about the GDPR, about the main topics there, and about privacy by design, how it is meant in the GDPR, and then we can discuss at the end some current topics, how companies could use these technologies in a privacy by design way, so to make it compliant from the start and when they design these technologies. So maybe my first presentation will be like 25, 30 minutes, and then we have enough time to discuss these current topics in this form of a workshop. But I'm glad to have an open discussion there. Yeah, let's first talk about the general data protection regulation. So I want to present the six fundamental changes there, which are important for companies, for consumers as well. Also in the second part, I don't think it can be seen here already. Thank you. So in the first part, I want to present the six fundamental changes of the General Data Protection Regulation, go through that on a higher level, also present to you what is also new, which is important when you implement new technologies, so further topics regarding the GDPR, and in the end, I want to have an open discussion about current topics in digital technologies like face recognition, smart television, so tracking over television, to think about what can be done under this GDPR. So discuss that with you, what is possible there and what should or what could companies do to use these technologies. Also connected car, we can discuss however you want to have the discussion. So let's start with the six fundamental changes of the GDPR. You probably know that it's a regulation by the European Union. It has to be implemented by May 2018, so there's not that much time left. It's a little more than 6 months now, and it replaces in the European Union all the existing data protection laws and will be a unified regulation for European consumers. So this sounds really good. And it's a start from scratch. So that's the first fundamental change. In the past, the privacy law was always in a way that, well, there was a European framework law, and then the countries had to implement it separately. And they did it in a different way, so the level of data protection law was quite different, especially in the more, in the British states and Great Britain and in other countries as well, was a low level of data protection. In other countries like Germany, France, Austria, was a higher level. So EU want to get rid of that, and they did it with this uniform regulation. And within that regulation, and now comes the second fundamental change, there's a new definition of personal data. Basically, every tracker, and well, before me we had the discussion, or we had the presentation about trackers, basically every tracker is now personal data. Previously, personal data was like something like name, address, telephone number, maybe bank account number, this can be discussed. But what was not considered personal data in the old law were information like cookie IDs or even IP address. IP address was not named in the law, but in effect, as there were different court decisions about IP addresses, some court decisions saying, yes, in this case, in a certain case, IP address is personal data. In other cases, it may not be personal data. So that was, like, in practice, a difficult thing to handle. And that's why all the authorities, industry practice was developed in a way that everybody treated IP address as personal data. But by definition, by law, it was not defined as being personal data. MAC addresses as well, not seen as personal data, because MAC address is an address of the device. And one said in the past that when you have the MAC address, you cannot come back to a person. Only certain companies, like the retail stores, if they get the MAC address, and if the device was bought in that retail store or in that chain, yeah, they could define or find a person using a MAC address, at least the person who bought the device, maybe not the person who uses the device. So a lot of discussions in the past. And because there were so many discussions in the past, the regulator said, okay, we want to have the definition of personal data much clearer than in the past. So they said, under the new regulation, any identifier is considered personal data. And that means also IP address, that means cookie IDs. So whenever a cookie is set and even a random ID is just seen in the cookie or can be seen in the cookie, this is seen as personal data, as well as digital fingerprints that was discussed before, user IDs, location data, and so on. Well, if we think that through, if we take that point of location data, that can be quite discussed. If you have exact location data based on smartphones with geolocation tracking, and when the GPS coordinates or lat longs are collected in certain time steps, like maybe every 30 seconds, if you do that over a time, then you clearly, and everybody agrees to that, you have personal data. There's no doubt about that. So if you have a detailed tracking of the GPS coordinates over a certain time, it will be personal data because it's unique. And if you have more information about the smartphone and the user who uses that, you can find the person. On the other way, there are, and that's also used by the industry, on the other way, IP location data is calculated over certain mechanisms. So for example, what the industry does is they take the IP address, they take the different brackets of the IP address, and they know, for example, that some numbers of the IP address are for a region, so for a country. Further, numbers of the IP address are for closer regions. If you look at the IP address, you can find locations, but the maximum is something like a smaller city. So the area of a smaller city you can find, and you can calculate out of the IP address. And the question is whether this location data, it is some form of location data, whether this location data is personal data or not. If you just do not have this definition, you wouldn't say that if you have a smaller city, you say it's location data. Yeah? There has been defined a definition of when location data is really personal data in the old law, and people said as long as there are more than five households or people in a cell, then you can say it's anonymous. So if you do the location tracking as exact as that, less than five people may have the same location, then it would be personal data. Otherwise, it would be anonymous. So I think that's a rule which has held before courts, and that might be a rule which can be used in that case of location data as well. Another discussion is about the online identifier, and there have been quite some lawyers who looked at the new data protection law and said, okay, well, if we look at the law in the exact wording, it says, well, these trackers, IP address, cookie IDs, fingerprints, user IDs, and so on, so some of them are online identifiers. So these trackers, if you can find a person using this tracker, then it's personal data. But if you're not able to find the person using that tracker, then for this company or this individual, it's not personal data. And what they mean with that is, okay, if you have a cookie ID and you have a data management platform which collects cookie IDs and tries to build segments over from internet users using these IDs and using the search and click behavior in the internet, well, this data management platform, they just have the cookie ID. They don't have names. So the question is whether for these platforms it's personal data when you just have this ID, which might be a 4711 or something like that. Well, I would say let the lawyers have that discussion, but it's probably in the field of data protection not good to have that discussion, but just to accept what the lawmakers wanted or what they intended to have with the new law, a much broader definition of personal data. And that's what, well, most of the people recommend, to take it as it's said there, so that all identifiers are personal data. Well, when we say that, we know then that when you use want to use personal data, so these online trackers, you either need to have a reason by law that you're allowed to use that due to a contract, like you're running an e-commerce shop, then you're allowed to use certain personal data because you need to deliver the goods and need to collect the payment, or you have a consent. However, the new data protection law now founds another reason when you can use personal data, and even without consent. And that's an interesting piece. And that's an article which is discussed now very, very much. That's this so-called Article 6.1f in the data protection regulation, in the GDPR. And basically this article says that when a data processing is conducted by a company and the company is having legitimate interest to conduct, process the data. When they have this legitimate interest and when they are not predominating the interests of the involved individual. So there needs to be a balance of the interest of the company and the user. So they are not allowed to predominate the interests of the user. So if they don't do that, then they can use personal data without consent. And that's very new. So there are now some cases when they don't need the consent and don't need maybe a contractual relationship to the user, but could collect personal data. So, well, the second change we just heard is definition of personal data enlarged. Yeah, and now here we find, oh, there are some cases where you can use personal data without consent. Now, the big question is, what is legitimate interest? That's the third bullet point here. And one point which has been put into law is that online marketing may be a legitimate interest, maybe. So in certain cases, online marketing can be done with personal data and without consent. So this tracking is sometimes used for online marketing to send consumers this advertising or that advertising, where this advertising may be random and the other advertising may be personalized. But that would be allowed under this article, using personal data, using cookies, using trackers without consent. Well, you may have heard that the e-privacy regulation, which is a new law, is now heavily discussed. And just last week, there was a decision of the European Parliament saying, well, we want to have a new e-privacy regulation, and this may be contradictory to that, what I'm just talking about. So there might be new rules on, how to use cookies. But this is now the law, at least the law which has to be implemented by May 2018 and this e-privacy regulation which is still discussed, well, there will be a e-privacy regulation, but nobody knows right now what's going to be the outcome. There are very heavy discussions and people talk about the heaviest lobbying for a long time, which is being done for this e-privacy regulation, because the marketing and advertising industry does not want this opt-in for cookies again. Yeah. But I don't want to talk too much about that. So the third fundamental change is basically an offset of the second one, where it's more detailed definition, with now having an option to show a legitimate interest and then to be able to use personal data without consent. Well, to cover then the interests for the users, the fourth fundamental change is the one that the user rights have been strengthened. So one important user right, I mentioned here, the opt-out. Yeah, it's clear, and that's absolutely clear, whenever you use this Article 6.1f, so saying, oh, I have a legitimate interest, I use personal data without consent, but then you have to offer more and more transparent user rights, and one of that is the opt-out. I don't need to go to step through the details here, so that is very clear from the regulator, and what goes together with this opt-out right is also a right or an obligation for the companies for more transparency. So that's a right for the consumers to have more transparency and more information about what happens with the data. Well, however, there are big discussions what transparency means. So does transparency mean what has been done like years ago when this was all transparent but described in 50 pages of privacy policies, so it was transparent, but did people understand? Or is it more transparent if you put your what a company does in a privacy policy which has just like the headlines and then some additional information when you click on that or so? So that's a discussion what transparency is, but it has been strengthened in the way how company have to present that to the users. The last important change, the sixth one, is that there are, and that's more obligation for the companies, that there are higher obligations to document what companies do with the data. So it's much more, or it's easier for the authorities to look at what do the companies do, what kind of data do they collect, how do they process it, and so on. The companies have to document these processes and have to have the documents prepared when they are asked, for example, by authorities to show them what they are doing with personal data. For the consumer, that it's probably not going to be visible what companies do there, but it's a larger obligation for the companies to do that. Yeah, these were the six fundamental changes in the GDPR, now valid and to be implemented as of May next year. But what is also new? What is also new are two important topics. I highlight here two important topics. I don't want to talk about all of these. One is the data protection impact assessment. I will explain that a little more in detail over the next slides. And the other one I want to highlight is data protection by design and by default. So let's first look at the data protection impact assessment that basically says that when a company wants to implement a new technology, they have to make an evaluation whether there's a risk to consumers. And when there's a risk to consumers, they have to go through the process to define that risk, to look at what is like the real risk for the consumers. Is that a financial risk? Is that a risk of like the personal situation? Is that a health risk or whatever kind of risk may occur? And then they need to look at how do they manage that risk for the consumers. So do they, how safely do they store the data? What kind of consent definitions do they have? What kind of partners do they work together? Are these partners using state-of-the-art technologies to store the data safely? And so on and so on. So basically, that's a risk-based approach. As soon as there's a risk to the consumer, they have to, the companies have to develop these data protection impact assessments and document their processes and document the technical, organizational, security measures, and so on. This is a very high responsibility for the companies and for maybe other responsible parties in that sense. There will be cases where the authorities can define where a DPIA, Data Protection Impact Assessment, where it has to be conducted. So, for example, we expect that the authorities will say, for health data, you have to do it. If you process financial data, like bank account numbers and so on, you probably have to do that, and so on. So the authorities will define a list of branches, typical business models, where these impact assessments have to be conducted. And then the companies need to do that to be really sure that the authorities don't define any fines if they don't have it done. So that is one important topic. Another important topic which has been changed as well is this data protection by design, which means that as soon as a new technology is developed, companies have to think about to fulfill data protection requirements directly when they build the technology and when they implement it. So they have to implement appropriate technical and organizational measures, so-called TOMs. These technical and organizational measures are meant to secure the data so that the data cannot be easily hacked or cannot be lost that easily, and so on. And there are mechanisms even named that pseudonymization, you see that here in the middle, pseudonymization may be a measure to secure data. And what companies do when they pseudonymize data is basically they have a key with which they transform personal data to a new form of data where only a few persons or only the company knows that key. So if you, for example, hash data, if you hash data with a certain algorithm, that can be a way that only one company knows what kind of hashing algorithm has been used. And then only this company can de-pseudonymize data, so detect a person or personal data out of this character which has been calculated out of a hashing algorithm. So with these measures, with these technical organizational measures, data needs to be or can be made more secure. But there are other topics as well, like data minimization policies which shall be implemented, so not to use all the data, but only the data you really need for your product, for your technology, and so on. So that's a very important principle in the regulation. However, what that really means for a certain technology just needs to be developed and defined by the companies. It's very difficult to give general rules there, and that's really a problem in applying this data protection law. And the same basically results when you look at data protection by default can be taken out of this article here, because it's really not clear what by default means. There are a lot of different interpretations for that. Here you see from this article from the GDPR that by default means only personal data which are necessary for each specific purpose of the processing are processed. Well, who defines what is really necessary? Normally it's the companies, they define it. So it is a principle which is very often named by authorities, by other people, but I don't think it's such a strong principle because it's really depending on the reasons a company gives why they are processing data. So that's why I don't want to talk too much about it. Practical consequences for the companies. So you need to define the processes for privacy by default. Companies look at where can they pseudonymize or maybe even anonymize data. Anonymization of data would be a way that nobody can de-anonymize the data. So nobody can define a person out of this anonymous data, and I will come back to that point, anonymization of data. It is not defined in the new law, but in the law, anonymization of data is described at several different parts of that law. So anonymization of data is possible, but it's not really defined. That's a certain problem. So you need to find somebody else to say, okay, this data is anonymous or not. Yeah, these are some. These are some practical consequences. And now I would like, to have a discussion with you, an open discussion about current topics. And I named one of these or some of these topics just when I started. And now I'm happy to apply the principles I just introduced here over the last 30 minutes to discuss maybe some of these topics. If some of you wants to have to start with a certain topic here, I'm happy to do that. Just raise your hand. Yeah.
Hello. Okay. I'm not sure if it's wrong. You can pass it on to something else. I wouldn't ask something about those subjects you presented there. It's just something you said before.
Yeah.
Because. Yeah, you told that there are some cases where processing data can be used even without consent. And yep. I was wondering how far you could go with that. For example, in my area, I'm engaged in different organizations, NGOs, and they fear a lot about those new laws because they think that the usual way how you get at new data from new persons who could actually support your organization might not be possible anymore with the new regulation. Therefore, if your example a public poll or whatever, and you tell the people, okay, we will use this data as well to contact you again if you do something, if you make a campaign or whatever. Normally, it was that way. This way, you can get data from people, and you can ask them later on if they want to support your organization for that and that. And you could argue that this is something that falls in that area. But the question is, how will it actually be ruled in court and so on?
Yeah, I think that's what has been left a little bit open by the lawmakers. Yeah, they give a certain explanation of what a legitimate interest is or can be. There are a few topics named there, like direct marketing may be such a legitimate interest, but they didn't say that market research or polls are a legitimate interest. But one could come to that conclusion. So there are a lot of people now trying to give interpretations of that law and trying to develop whether this falls under that clause of legitimate interest or not. I would, right now, if I would conduct such a poll as you described, I would say better get a consent, yeah? Because otherwise it's endangered that you still can use that. Because I have not seen interpretations saying, oh, you can do a poll without getting the consent of the users. Maybe I start, if you don't mind, I start with this discussion face recognition, because there has been quite heavy discussion in Germany over the last 3 or 4 months, not especially about face recognition, but about similar comparable topics. So what companies do, and what I'm telling you now is has been stated in public, so it's not confidential information or so. So there has been an article in Die Zeit in February this year stating that in large retail stores like Real and Deutsche Post, that they use cameras to detect persons and to find some or collect some data. And well, the journalists were quite critical about that, because they thought it's some kind of face recognition. And if you do face recognition, that's strictly limited where and how you can do that. So for certain like criminal aspects, police authorities, other authorities can do that, but private companies, private persons are not allowed to do that in public. So the retail stores, like Real, Deutsche Post, they were named in that case. Well, these are public spaces, everybody can walk there, so they are not allowed to do face recognition there. So they questioned whether they do something like that. And what then people found, and there was a big discussion afterwards, is, well, they use cameras, but they do not make pictures from faces. What they use the cameras for, and that's a technology which has been developed by, well, there were different companies who developed these technologies, is that they use the camera to look at a face, but they only look at the part of the eyes, at the nose and the mouth. And they use these three parts, so they basically use fragments of a face to classify this face as being from a male or female, to classify it as of some age cluster. So maybe a face from a person who is between 30 and 40, 40 and 50, and 50 and older or so, and some other characteristics maybe. And only the only thing or only data which is stored in that whole system using this camera is a classification of a certain person which went or is running or going through a store, being male or female, age cluster, so some so-called metadata. They didn't do more. And then the data protection authorities looked at that, and our company has been involved in that as well. There has been a big discussion, and a public discussion even started. And the public discussion was quite heavy. But when the authorities looked at that, that was the Bavarian Authority of Data Protection. When they looked at that, after a few days, they wrote it down that this is anonymous. It's not a detection of a person, although you're using a camera, but the system is locked, that the company who implements that system, they implement and use a camera, but they cannot get a picture of a face out of that system. The only thing they can get out of that system is the classification of the metadata. I just gave some examples about, like age cluster, male, female, and so on. So that is and was a big discussion. And other discussions on that face recognition are like when you use Wi-Fi routers in a store and try over triangulation, try to find smartphones who are moving through a store. That's what's done as well. And what companies do in that case is they use these trackers I mentioned earlier, for example, the MAC addresses from the devices, and just try to find out how long does the MAC address stay in that store? Where is it in that store mostly? Is it more in the parts of the groceries or clothes or whatever? And try to also analyze how many MAC addresses are in that store every day, how long do they stay, yeah, things like that. So they do some analytics on that. Where when you would look now at the GDPR, we would say, okay, it's the personal data. If you use the MAC address, it's an identifier, it's used online, you'd say that's clearly personal data. Are they allowed to do that? So then, well, the companies who do that, they thought about, oh, can we maybe potentially use this Article 6.1f I just mentioned earlier? So that's an open discussion. Yeah, these technologies which have been implemented, they are basically saying, based on the old law, oh, MAC address is not personal data. Out of the MAC address, quite difficult to get the person because you need to know the retail store where this device has been sold, and then you need to know whether the person who bought the device is still using the device. So only few people or companies can do that. And these, well, technology providers who provide these technologies with the Wi-Fi routers, they usually don't have access to the accounting data of the retail stores, so they cannot do that. So with these two examples on face recognition, I want to show you how companies look at the new law and at this requirement of conducting a privacy by design model. So basically the first example with the fragments of a face which are calculated somehow and calculated into some metadata, even the authorities say this is anonymous. Although it may be the case that in the end it's a huge amount of data, they may even find the same face again, because it might be the case that the metadata is so detailed that they know, oh, this person has, or this face has been in the store last week and is now coming back. But if it's just about metadata, then this could work. And the other example with the Wi-Fi routers, that's still based on the old law, but let's see how this is to be seen or evaluated looking at the new data protection law. Yeah, if there are questions, I'm happy to discuss. Yeah, you have a question, yeah, up front.
Thank you, Christoph. I think that precisely the example of the face recognition software shows how industry and the privacy activist community sees things differently. Mm-hmm. To us, as privacy activists, what matters is not a static conception of privacy by design, which is the one that clearly industry endorses. So basically you said industry considers it legitimate because it is not using the data in an inappropriate way or illegitimate way. To us, what matters is whether that application was designed in a way that made it impossible to use it in an illegitimate way. That's the crucial point. Yeah. To us, privacy by design means that from the very outset, the impossibility of GDPR breach has to be incorporated in the design. Mm. The fact of how the data is actually used is a static issue that to us should be relevant, because obviously in that application, I didn't have a look at the source code, but clearly if they could record individual features of a face, granted, and of course the authorities looked into it, and approved it. Granted, they were not using it inappropriately, but my question is, under privacy by design, that should not be the issue. The issue should be, could that application associate, first of all, record the faces and then associate them to an individual from the outset? That's the crucial point. And I think this is a divide, a gap that's growing, because as the May 2018 deadline approaches, industries in Europe are beginning to realize the huge costs that are involved with becoming GDPR compliant. And we are already seeing, as the privacy community, many attempts to kind of wriggle their way around or even creatively interpret what should not be, especially under risk-based approach, it should not be issued open to debate and discussion. But thank you very much for a very, very interesting presentation.
Maybe just one comment on my side, what you're saying. I think there are, well, several levels of privacy. And one is the definition of privacy, and then also privacy by design, privacy by default in the law. And there are also other definitions. Like there is maybe, there's also a definition of privacy from the consumer's point of view. So that's, in German, I sometimes say it as gefühlte Privatsphäre. Yeah? So what the consumer really feels about privacy. And there's also an absolute privacy, which you mentioned earlier in what you said. So whether technically it's possible for anybody to really find a person out of the data. And that's a technical definition of privacy. When I presented my examples and what I said about the GDPR, that's always the definition of privacy in the law. That's one level. There are also other levels. Yeah? And I know that there are a lot of people and saying, okay, the definition in the law is not good, it's not exact enough, and it's not good enough for the consumers because they may feel different. And please look at what is the consumers feel about privacy. And to the largest extent, look at what is technically possible.
I would like to comment upon the last remark where privacy by design was defined as I designed the application in such a way that there is no way to get the identity of the person. I'm working for a bank. I need to implement privacy by design for the bank statements. People want a bank statement, and the bank statement is never anonymous. Even if we take out the names, even if we take out the IBANs, the bank account numbers of the counterparty, it is always non-anonymous. There is no way to actually implement a bank accounting system in any anonymous way. The data is associated with customers. So I can reduce the impact. I can store the names in a different place. But at some point, people want a bank statement. And in the bank statement, they want to have the counter account numbers. Yeah. And they want to have the amounts. And I can, of course, hide the amounts. And that would be a very good way to implement privacy by design. But if the account numbers in a bank statement and the amount are incorrect, I'm hiding information, which is great from a data protection standpoint, but it's useless. The bank account statement will always be identifying. And at some point, all the information that might be in different compartments in the bank comes together in the bank account statement. And it's perfectly clear.
Yeah, I agree to what you say, that the bank account statement itself, it's personal data and will stay at that. But the same when you say, oh, the name of a person is personal data and will stay at that. But with the bank account data, you can do the same with, like, names. You can put names into groups and say, okay, there's a group of male and female people. If you just say male or female, yeah, it will be a grouping, and that if you say male, it's not personal data. And for bank account data, what you can do, but I know that you then do not have the detailed information anymore, you can define metadata. You can say there are bank account statements in the bracket between like below zero balance or balance between zero and 1,000 and so on. So group data. But, well, that's different form of data, and you're doing some maybe analysis with that or grouping or so on, so you're not having the bank account information anymore. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, and I personally would like to have a statement of my bank transfers.
Yeah, but that stays
I
personal.
Can't
that's
anything
clear. Yeah.
About this.
Yeah, but that stays personal. That's clear. Yeah.
Any further questions? Coming back to Wi-Fi probing or Wi-Fi tracking, I have a question regarding that, because I have seen that even in a larger city you need less than 100 access points who do actually MAC tracking to be able to do statistics where people live. You don't know exactly who they are, but you know where they usually they are usually the usual places are where they are working, where their home is. It's actually quite easy, and it's actually quite okay, so my question is, even though these companies say that it is anonymous data, for example, Cisco has a product where you can say, I can tell you which person in your store is watching or is looking at which, not at which product, but where the location actually is, where this person is standing. So. For example, at the cashier, you know the bank account because of your bank card. Mm. So you could actually correlate the data with MAC addresses from mobile phones. These collections are usually done by more or less taking this tracking data and sending it to servers, and then the statistics are done over there. Mm. The question is this affected? How? In my opinion, it's actually very sensitive data, because a lot of these devices are unique, still have a unique ID, and you know more or less which unique ID is in which place if you have enough information.
Yeah, I think that's a very difficult question. I would say that this data, as you described it, it's clearly personal data. I don't think that there still can be used this Article 61F as having a legitimate interest for that, but that you need to have consent from the end users to really use that data.
Yeah, that's the real problem, because Wi-Fi tracking is more or less done for everybody. You have no idea, you have no chance to actually get the consent, because it's you can receive Wi-Fi tracking data over several hundred meters. So even if you're walking outside the store, which is doing Wi-Fi tracking, even though it might have on display, yeah, if you enter this place, you will be tracked. People will be tracked outside this store, no matter what.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. But I can now only say what, well, to my mind, is legally possible and what is not possible. And I would say what you described in that detail, that is legally not possible to do it this way, but still technically it's possible. So one needs to look at who does it, and does this company have the consent from the consumers or not?
Okay. We still have time for
one last question.
Thank you for your talk and thoughts. Do you see in the world world where GDPR is implemented, users will not need to use tools like Adblock or anti-tracking because they are being used, because users feel that they are being tracked on the web? But given that GDPR says it's privacy by design, do you see a world where there will be GDPR and users do not need to use any of these tools to protect themselves from being tracked?
I think the discussion is still ongoing. The GDPR doesn't finally answer that point because there's still this open discussion about the e-privacy regulation. So this additional law, which is now being discussed in the European Parliament, or they had a proposal last week where they said, okay, they go for this approach, but there will be also a discussion in the European Council and then in the European Commission, and then the three institutions together will discuss it further. So this law, that might change the picture. The GDPR right now has certain clauses in there, as I explained, but I don't think that the industry is going to use them because they know that the other law is still in preparation, so they won't do something very new right now. So I don't think that the consumers will change that much right now. They all wait until the finalization of the privacy regulation.
Okay. Doesn't look like we have any more open questions at this moment. Oh, one very last one.
Hi. Don't you think that even if there is a regulation, like in what we have seen during a finance crisis, a lot of banks just decide to pay the fines, not apply the regulation. So even if there is now a regulation, there is maybe companies that have, let's say, enough money to just pay the fines and do whatever they want.
Yeah. Well, there's still the risk that companies behave that way, as you described, but the fines have been highly increased, so they are now up to 4% of the worldwide revenue. Authorities can define these fines up to 4% of worldwide revenue or up to 20 million euros. That's one part where the risk is a lot higher for companies. And the other part where the risk is higher is that competitors can go to court and associations can go to court and tell or make the case that a company is violating the law. So the risk for companies is a lot higher with the new GDPR. So I think not that many companies would do that anymore, but there still probably will be some companies who still violate the law, but the risk is increasing dramatically for them.
Okay, this topic seems to still cover a lot of controversy. Yeah. And the problems between technical and legal possibilities. Thank you, Christoph Bauer.
Thank you.